He wants to be God with us, which is God in us. With and in the Greek are the same. In the book of Revelations, chapter 3, verse 20, Jesus says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock." Now, he's talking to a church. We will understand if he's talking about unbelievers. He is talking to his church. Revelation 3:20 is to the church. He says he's standing outside and knocking. Whenever people backslide and turn from God, what they need is not doctrine. What they need is not philosophy. What they need is to get back to the presence of God. Do you know that when men sinned, what men did was to run away from the presence of God? What they need is to get back into the presence of God, and then God will talk doctrine with them, and then God will talk philosophy with them, and then God will talk healing to them, and then God will talk them principles and all His laws, etc. What they need is not precepts, they need His presence first. Emmanuel must come first, which is why, unless we all have the presence of God in our life, our words cannot carry to someone who is going away from God. And for the first three chapters, it talks about Emmanuel, God with us. Then slowly, he begins to talk about his spirit. His spirit in chapter 11. His spirit in chapter 11. And by the time he reached chapter 12, in verse 3, he again talks about the joy of salvation. And the most they could go to is Emmanuel, the Spirit of God, and back to the joy of salvation. Let me tell you, a lot of Christians have lost the joy of salvation that they once had with God. When they lost their first love, they need to get back to God again. They are like Isaiah chapter 7 to chapter 12, the time when they turn away from God, like in the book of Judges. And then, of course, we have the next area of Isaiah is from chapter 13 right to chapter 23. And in this third area of the first section, 13 to 23, we have judgments and pronouncements on all the 10 nations that surround Israel. So if you were reading the book of Isaiah, and if supposedly that all the prophecies were delivered systematically, at first you hear Isaiah saying, "Oh, there's judgment that's going to come." And he was in Jerusalem. "Oh, there's judgment that's going to come in Jerusalem." And he talked about all those things that are going to come, as well as the promises of God. And all the people in the northern kingdom will say, "Oh, very good, very good." And all the surrounding nations are saying, "Very good, very good." Suddenly he turned to the northern kingdom, "And also to you in the north." And all the surrounding nations say, "Very good, very good." Suddenly he turned around to all the 10 and hit them one by one. Now it looks as if Isaiah was a fierce fire and brimstone prophet. And that gives us the impression of fire and brimstone prophet like Elijah type, etc. But my friends, the word used from chapter 13 to 23 is the burden. Look at 13 verse 1. The burden. The burden. And on it talk about the burden against this and the burden against that. The burden of the Lord. Look at chapter 14 verse 28. The burden which came in the year that King Ahaz died. Chapter 15 verse 1. The burden against Moab. The burden. What's that burden? The word burden means a grief and a sorrow. He was not just preaching fire and brimstone. He was preaching tears and cries and weeping. So don't get the wrong impression of Isaiah. This third section of the first major portion, 13 to 23, tells you of the 10 nations, and they talk about how the historical period of the Old Testament. Do you know that the entire history of the Old Testament, from the time of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, and right on to Kings and Chronicles, and Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, and all these books, where the kings fell, where the kings rise again, many kings fell, many kings rise again, all this historical record come back to the three main things: the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Same three sins that Jesus overcame in the wilderness. Same three sins that 1 John warns us about. And all these 10 nations are similar to all the Canaanite nations, all the surrounding nations that they did not overcome. Do you notice that everything was overcame in David's time? But when Solomon came in, he brought an Egyptian princess. Then he went with these Ammonites and all the Canaanites and all the Jebusites, all these things, he began to compromise, and once again all these things destroyed them. In the Old Testament, Deuteronomy, looking over at Deuteronomy chapter 7 verse 1 and 2, because it's a summary of talking about what they faced in the land of Canaan, so we are referring to that. In chapter 7 verse 1 and 2, it says, "When the Lord your God bring you into the land which you go to possess, and has cast out many nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and the Termites." Seven nations greater and mightier than you. Notice there were seven nations that they faced. But here in Isaiah chapter 13, right on to chapter 23, there were 10 nations. And all these 10 nations, each one of these nations represent different areas of these three major sins. Like you notice Babylon, which is mentioned in chapter 13, Babylon, and then in chapter 14, Syria and Philistia represent the spirit of pride. Babylon is the key. And it talk about, if you want to study further, it talk about the three workings of the spirit of pride. And it tells you how it works. Each of these nations represent that. When in chapter 15 verse 1, it talk about Moab. Moab represent the lust of the flesh. And it talk about how the workings of the flesh works. Moab, Syria, and Israel. Israel referring to the northern kingdom. Then in chapter 18 and chapter 19, talks about Ethiopia and Egypt. These represent the workings of the lust of the eyes, the world. Egypt always is a symbol of the world, the spirit of the world. So you have those three areas: the spirit of pride, the spirit of the world, and the spirit of lust, the flesh. All these three are working in these 10 nations, and throughout the history of the Old Testament books, historical books, it was a story of the spirit of God against the spirit of pride, the spirit of lust, and the spirit of the world, which Paul in the New Testament still talk about, that we have not received the spirit of the world, but the spirit of God. The same battle is still going on. And then, finally, from chapter 24 to chapter 35 of Isaiah, 24 to 35 of Isaiah, they focus on the prophetic books. After the historical books are the poetical and the prophetical books, the prophetic books, which is Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel and all these other books, Daniel, etc., and all the other minor prophets. So it becomes from Isaiah chapter 24 right on to Isaiah 35. They are like books of Isaiah, books of Ezekiel, Jeremiah, all lumped together. And what they are trying to show you is how prophecy work. It is one that is an important study. We don't have time to go into that. But those chapters from 24 to 35 will give you keys and clues to the workings of the spirit of prophecy. I remember in the prophetic seminar, I talked about the four winds of God, and how it relates to the two types of prophet. You will find that mentioned in that section there. You'll find the east wind mentioned, particularly the other winds not mentioned, but the manifestation are there. And all the spirit of prophecy and how it functions. Now, we cannot cover in detail every area, but I'll just cover some. Like in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, it says that prophecy is for three things: comfort, exhort, and edify. Comfort, exhort, and edify. Edify, exhort, and comfort. Three areas that prophecy will always exhort, comfort, and edify. What does it mean? When it's talking about comfort, it talks about confirmation. Spirit or prophecy will always confirm. When it talks about exhorting is to encourage and sort of at the same time show you a certain way of doing things, lead you to do certain things, keep you well in doing certain things. Exhortation implies direction. Comfort implies confirmation. Exhortation implies direction. And edification implies impartation. To edify is to build up, to impart something. And you will find that from Isaiah 24 right to Isaiah 35, there are all these things mentioned. See, for example, in chapter 25, you notice here in verse 8, he will swallow up death forever. And the Lord God will wipe away tears from all faces. The rebuke of his people he will take away from all the earth. And it talks about how he will comfort the people. Then, in 26 verse 3, Isaiah, you will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you. Talks again about comfort and confirmation that will take place. Then talk about exhortation and direction that may come in chapter 28. Verse 13. See, when there is direction, prophecy will produce comfort. Prophecy will produce exhortation. It says, "Word upon the word of the Lord will be precept upon precept, line upon line. Here a little, there a little." Talks about how prophecy functions in direction. That when God gives you a directional prophecy, you cannot just use that one prophecy to direct your entire life, because each prophecy directs part of your life. So this section is important. It's a lot of principles on prophecy found in 24 to 35. And just to quote and show the other areas of impartation, you find impartation in chapter 35, verse 5 to 7. The eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped, the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the dumb shall sing. Now this is talking about how prophecy edifies. It will impart something. It will impart life into a person. And you'll find that in the flow of 24 to 35, it flows from comfort, it flows into exhortation, and then it flows into edification. At the same time, there are different flows. There are the flow of the four winds of God. You'll find like when the wind of the east is blowing, which is judgment in 27 verse 1, Leviathan, which represents Satan, will be judged. And at the same time, he talks about judgment in chapter 27 verse 8, he talks about the east wind that blows. So you will find also the four winds of God blowing from chapter 24 right to chapter 35. And then we also have, it talks about how prophecy works.